even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I am Dori Shafrir.
And we're not experts.
No, but we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Before we get into it, a friendly reminder that you can visit our website, Forever 35 Podcast, for links to everything we mention on the show. Follow us on Twitter at Forever 35 Pod, Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast, and you can join the Forever 35 Facebook group, where the password for entry is the word serums.
Indeed it is. You can also shop our favorite products at shopmyshelf.us/forever35. You can sign up for the newsletter at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. Kate, sidebar about this. Yes. I feel like we have never gotten more feedback about a product than the product you recommended in the newsletter.
I know. I'm fascinated by it. It's by other people who use it.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting too is that you don't even use it.
No, it's a product that my daughter uses. It's a Davinus. I don't even know how to say that hair brand name out loud. It's their Love shampoo and conditioner, and it's like changed my daughter's hair. It's been wild. Maybe I should try it for myself. I don't know. I've never even tried it, but she's claimed it.
I love it.
Meanwhile, I'm using my Kirkland brand hair shampoo and conditioner.
I'm using our pod sponsor, Pros.
Oh, I do like my Pros. I have a bunch in my shower. I have sponsors like Vegamore in there and Pros, and then I just have my Kirkland.
Hey, you gotta keep the Kirkland around.
I can't say no to Kirkland.
No. If you would like to reach us and tell us about your shampoo, we are reachable by voicemail or text at 781-591-0390, and you can email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com. And I do just want to remind everyone about our giving circle, and we will link to it in the show notes, but I think we're at over $12,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You all are so awesome.
It's so cool. So we have over $12,000. Our goal is to get to $20,000. So hopefully you can help us get there and choose the state that we're going to focus on. And yeah, it's great.
So just raise to put a little plug some money. For that. Put some, money where our mouths are. Welly, well, well. So my podcast conversation piece is that for the last 24 hours, I've been singing "I Think I'm Depressed" in my head to the tune of "You're Simply the Best," because I do think I'm depressed. But I've just been saying, "I think I'm depressed."
Oh my God, that's genius.
Then I can't think of anything else for this parody song.
More depressed than all the rest.
See, this is why I need you in my life. Yeah, I've been really down this week. I actually emotionally get very depressed right before my menstrual cycle starts. That's like a newer PMS experience in the last couple of years. But boy, I have been just down this week. Down in the dumps. And it turns out I'm not alone.
No, I also have been feeling depressed. And I told Matt's thing is that like only one of us can be depressed at a time. Oh,
that's a good rule, but you know, it's hard. It's hard when it's out of your hands, essentially.
Exactly. And since he gets depressed more than I do, that when I get depressed, it's like oh gosh. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's also like overlaid with money anxiety. So I'm just like, oh, this is like a not great combination, like between just like everything in the news, everything that continues to come out about the Uvalde shooting, I just like is very hard for me to deal with and hard for me not to fixate on. So there's that. And then just like, I don't know. It's like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the trauma of the news cycle.
Yeah.
Mixed with whatever you're dealing with in your own personal life.
Yeah.
It has felt hard to find glimpses of anything positive.
Mhm. Well, yeah, I mean it's like but then I get into that cycle of like, but ultimately, like, I have a good life. You know what I mean? And, like, I have a son that I'm crazy about and, you know, just, like, all those things. But then I am like, but I don't feel great.
Yeah, I know. I have that same response, too, where it's like, I'm come to this depression from a place of extreme privilege and where nothing is, quote, like truly wrong with my life right now, which almost makes it more challenging.
Yeah.
To kind of even realize what's going on. Like, I'm just like, I can't motivate to do anything. Like, what is wrong with me? For days, I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. I'm sleeping all the time. And then I was like, oh, Kate.
See, I can't sleep.
Oh, fascinating. I can't get up. Together, we
are nailing
together,
it.
We are
nailing life.
So when you get depressed, if you're in a depressive cycle, do you adjust your meds? Do you talk to somebody? Do you try to do one thing that kind of you feel like helps? Or do you do nothing? Because that's also a fair route to take.
Well, I think my instinct sometimes is like, I need to like blow up my life. Like I need to change everything in my life, which is not a great instinct. And I'm trying to sort of like balance that.
Yeah.
But then I think that's like my way of trying to like assert control over the situation.
Oh, fascinating. Okay.
And I think that's just like, that's part of what's going on now too. So I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know what to do.
Well, it's interesting. I feel like one of the reasons we started this podcast was that things in the world at the time back then also felt so chaotic and out of our control that it sometimes felt like the only thing we could control was like, what do I wash my face with?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, doesn't make anything better, but I do feel like that was the spirit behind.
Yes. What do you do?
Well, I have to tell you, I did, and I don't want to spoil our guest's self-care practice that she shares with us at the top of our interview, but I did her self-care practice today.
Oh.
Just to try it out.
Okay.
Should I reveal what I did?
Yes.
So I had to take a shower like before we recorded our podcast, and I was in there and I was like thinking about how this was what we were going to talk about. And then I was like, oh, well, we interviewed Kim Kranz and she takes a cold shower and she talked about how impactful that's been and kind of resetting her nervous system. And, you know, we've had previous guests. So like Juwad talked about like cold swimming. Annie Krabom from Eyewitness Beauty, who's a past guest with Nick Axelrod. She also does cold showers. So I was in the shower, very hot, washing the conditioner out of my hair. And then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try it. So I set a timer on my watch for 1 minute and I made it cold and I just stood there.
Ooh, and?
It was hard. I recited mantras I learned in my yoga teacher training just to like get myself focused on something. I felt actually kind of refreshed after, to be honest. It felt kind of good.
Wow. But, okay.
And I don't think I went very cold. Like, it was not ice cold. I would say you know, okay. I'm trying to break it in here and I just did a minute, but I was intrigued. I'll try anything. I'm already at like my max Wellbutrin dose. So I don't know. So that did help. I thought that was kind of interesting. And the other thing is that I try to just, you know, lean into the things that I enjoy that make me feel good.
Yeah.
Tonight I'm going to watch Fire Island with a couple of friends.
Ooh.
Have you watched that yet?
I haven't watched it yet.
I feel like that's going to really be a pick-me-up.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I talked to my therapist. Mm-hmm. Talked to my therapist about it. Those are my plans. Maybe talk to my psychiatrist. We'll see how this pans out.
I feel like you have like a better plan than I do.
Well, thank you. How long have you been feeling this way?
Like a month.
That's a long time.
Yeah. It's not great. But it's like really, I think it's really kind of like amped up in the last couple weeks.
Just for financial reasons? Just the...
Yeah, the money anxiety is like really getting to me. So,
well, and it doesn't help that we are experiencing inflation, and that's terrifying.
Yeah, I think that's also part of it. Is like every time I fill up my car, it's like $90.
I know.
I'm just like, what the fuck?
Oh, I know.
Bread has gotten more expensive. Like literally everything is more expensive, and it just like, I don't know. I think seeing like that in my face every day is, it just, when I'm already worried about money, just like,
yeah,
makes me be like, oh.
Yeah, I totally get it.
You know,
I went to buy a big thing of strawberries the other day and it was $14, and I like threw it back. Yes. It was a large strawberry container.
Wow.
I was at a Whole Foods, so already talking about some high prices being high. Okay. But $14?
No, that's crazy. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you're probably not the only one experiencing that, the added stress of what is happening right now.
Yeah. So
How are we caring for ourselves through this?
Well, I mean, last night I did do a half hour restorative yoga.
Ooh.
And that was
on
nice.
On Peloton?
On the Peloton app, yeah.
Good.
My old pal, Aditi.
Oh, I love Aditi. Just the fact that you did it is so good. You know, like you stepped up, you got on the mat, as they say.
I got on the mat. Yeah, I did. I think it's also overlaid with like my fear that I'm like washed up creatively.
Oh, let's get into this. Okay. That's fascinating. What is making you feel that way? Are you just kind of worried?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, you know, like my book not coming out in paperback was like a blow, and I don't know. It just, I've been trying to like work on this new book, but like everything is, I think I'm so concerned about money that I like am focusing on other things. And then I don't know. It's like, I think I'm just feeling like in a rut.
It's interesting.
And I think it's like my fear of like, well, maybe I'm just not like, I don't have anything interesting to say anymore. Maybe I never did, you know?
This is pretty heavy.
Yeah, sorry. I mean,
I don't. I don't mean that it's heavy for the show. I mean, these are heavy feelings to carry.
Oh yeah.
Like that's a lot of. I don't know. That's a lot of weight on you.
Yeah, it is.
Well, you know, I am definitely here if you want support, kind of processing and talking through these things.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate that.
And I think, you know, obviously I'm going to say to you, I don't think you're washed up and I do think you have a lot to say. But it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter what,
you know what,
someone else says.
I think I also like, it's interesting. I do feel like I can sometimes like chart my depression with almost on social media, because I think I do the opposite of what some people do. Like, I think when some people get depressed, they start posting a lot.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that.
And I stop posting. And because I just feel, I'm like, I have nothing to post. I have nothing to say. There's nothing interesting. Who cares? It's very nihilistic.
It is a little nihilistic.
I think that's like, that's just kind of like where I'm at right now.
Well, what a scintillating update. You and I are both depressed.
Yeah. I know. That's the other thing. It's like talking about being depressed is so boring.
I know. It's like talking about your dreams.
Yes. And I think that's why I haven't brought it up, because I'm just like, ugh.
I know.
Like, ugh. No one wants to hear this shit. It's like, save it for your therapist, you know?
Yeah.
That's me talking to myself. So, yeah.
I get it. But it also can feel good to just speak it out loud.
Speak my truth.
You got to speak that truth, you know? Or just, I think also, because once you say it, it hopefully, you may find other people are feeling the same way. And maybe that does help a little. I don't know. But it's really hard. It's hard right now. And it's just hard, period.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I do think we have a really interesting conversation coming up for people to listen to.
I agree.
We spoke with Kim Kranz. She is an artist, and there is a good chance you have seen her Wild Unknown tarot deck or Wild Unknown archetypes. She's made such beautiful, mystical things. So Kim has her BFA in drawing from Cooper Union, an MFA in mixed media, and an MA in psychology and creativity. Wow.
I mean, damn.
She has studied yoga in depth as well as shamanism, and she teaches events and workshops that, quote, activate the forces of creativity and radical transformation through art, meditation, mysticism, and movement.
Maybe I need one of her workshops.
I mean, she's a very thoughtful person to talk to. Yes. I thought like she was really, it was very interesting. Like she really thought about every question and is clearly like the creative is also very spiritual for her, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I might be projecting, but that was kind of what I took away from our conversation. And her tarot decks, like, and her other decks are just beautiful.
Also, she has a very hypnotic voice.
She does. Like, it was so soothing. I think you and I both like relaxed, our shoulders just like dropped down our backs as we talked to her. All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, you will hear from Kim.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
Well, Kim, welcome to Forever 35. We're both really glad you're here. I think Dory and I have both been fans of your work for a while. So this was very exciting to get to bring you into the folds of the podcast.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we like to start every episode with the same question for all our guests. And what that is that we would love to know a current self-care practice that is meaningful for you in your life. And that can truly be anything.
As per usual, I want to give you like three things instead of one
thing. We can handle three things. By all means, give us all three.
Well, I've been really into cold showers these days. It sounds so simple, And, you know, cold plunges are a big thing right now, but you need like a membership or a big tub and some ice and all that stuff. It's a bit of a production, but I've been finding that 3 minutes in the cold shower, it really clears my brain from any kind of fog. There's so much confusion right now and overwhelm. And I find it's a really great way to sort of dispel any tendencies towards feeling defeated or depressed or confused or foggy or lost. And it gets me back in my body really quickly. I don't need to go anywhere. It's affordable and accessible to all who have water. So I really love that practice. And you know what? It's amazing about it is it seems impossible. Like you stare at the cold water, like, no way. I can't do it. I can't. And then you do it and you're like, oh yeah, I can. And there's this amazing feeling that's almost equivalent to like 35, 40 minutes on the dance floor where you're suddenly like, oh yeah, this is me. I can just dance the whole night away. And I get that after just a couple minutes with the cold water.
Oh, it sounds almost like euphoric.
It's super euphoric because the blood is sent to the surface of the body. The body actually starts to warm itself after 90 seconds or so, or 2 minutes. So you actually get warm and radiant. So you come out with like a glow. And you come out with strength and vigor. You're not cold and defeated and shivering. It's like this burst of energy. And it's really, it's a lot of bang for your buck. So just know that it will seem impossible every single time. I do it every morning, and every morning it feels like it's not doable.
I love the way that you, and I haven't forgotten that you said you have three, because I'm dying to know the other two. But just with this practice, I love that the way that you connected it to kind of processing and moving through the world, which right now feels especially heavy. I'm wondering, how long have you been doing this on a daily basis? Is it something that you came to during this COVID pandemic, or is it something that you've done for a decade?
Well, it's quite an old practice. I mean, I grew up in the forests of Michigan where there's a lot of Scandinavian folk, and they have saunas, and in the winter, and you go in the sauna and then you jump in the snowbank and you go back and forth. So I grew up like taking saunas with my grandma and my parents, and we would do some equivalent of that or jump in the lake or what have you. So in a sense, I've been doing it for a long time, but especially during COVID, I got really into it because it was so confusing. I mean, it's still confusing.
Yeah.
But it was a good way to be able to do an ice plunge with no production and without leaving the house.
How did you get into it?
It's practiced in Kundalini yoga. One of their morning practices is to do dry brushing. You dry brush the body with a really simple brush. It gets the lymphatic system moving, and then you put some oil on your body, and then you hop in the cold water. The whole thing takes about 5.5 minutes. And to talk superficially for a second, in terms of like beauty and radiance, it's like a mega boon. The whole lymphatic system gets moving. The whole circulatory system gets moving. And I think most importantly, it does give me this feeling like anything is possible. You know, it kind of puts you in that position of, I can't do this. And then you do it, and you have a kind of victory, a small but mighty victory over the cold water. And it's pretty special.
In addition to cold plunging, because you did mention that you had three that came to the top of your mind, are there any other self-care practices that you feel called to share with us? Because this is very illuminating and we live for this stuff.
Well, I like short and sweet and doable. Like, you don't have to leave your house.
Yeah.
It's really important. And it's interesting because all of these three things have to do with the temperature of the body. And that has so much to do with the elements and temperature, the power of these very elemental forces like heat and water and air and fire and, you know, the five elements of our existence. So cold showers is utilizing one aspect of that. There's the water, and it happens to be like very, very cold. So that has an effect on the body. The second two things that I do also involve temperature and breath of fire. I'll do like 3 minutes of breath of fire, which is the navel pumping with equal inhale and exhale. So the breath is through the nose and the abdomen is pulsing. It's pretty well known. It's done in so many different types of traditions, but it's so powerful. And even just the name, thinking of it like alchemically stoking the fire that's intelligent and within our navel center is very, very helpful. And then I usually follow that with 3 minutes of either alternate nostril breath or Sitali breath, which is rolling the tongue and breathing in through like the taco. Yeah. If you can't do it, you can breathe through your teeth. You can go.
Yeah.
And then you exhale through the nose and bringing the cooling, very, calming, soothing, healing exhale through the whole body. And so first we're activating the fire to get it more, conscious and more, enlivened. And then bringing the cool air in, it takes the energy that we just stimulated and pushes it through the body in a way that's really nourishing, especially for this time. It's almost summer solstice. The world feels like it's on fire in every angle. Mm. And so that cooling breath, the balancing and nurturing breath is really powerful. So those three things, you can do them in, it's like 11, 12 minutes total, all three. And it's very, very good grouping.
Kim, I'd love to talk about the wild unknown. A friend first gave me the deck, I think it was 2013, when she came to visit me, and I was just kind of immediately taken with it and started, I don't do this anymore, but I did start kind of drawing a card daily. And it just was like this very important practice for me at a very specific time in my life. So I'm very grateful to you for creating it. And I'd love to just kind of talk about the origin of it. I think I read that The Wild Unknown was a website that you had to kind of showcase your art and artwork initially when you had a band. And
I think originally it was always a kind of moniker for my artwork. It wasn't associated with the band I was in at the time.
Okay.
But I used it as a kind of self-publishing moniker. So at the time, it sounds like if it was 2013, you had one of the very, very first decks that came out. So I created the deck, and I always feel like it's very important that people know this. I just printed it. I printed 1,000 copies. Oh, wow. And then I printed 1,000 more and 1,000 more, and they kept selling through the website, which was called The Wild Unknown. And I printed, distributed, and shipped it, you know, solo for, it was 4 years of doing that before a publisher came on board and said, "Oh, we think this might be popular." So I just really, it's really important to point out that, like, you know, the big, whatever they are, the big conglomerates in any industry don't necessarily know or aren't ready to believe in the thing that isn't popular yet. Mm-hmm. And that can be really discouraging for people. I would have had to have waited if I was waiting for a publisher to put the deck out or believe in it. I would have had to have waited until there was some other new deck that came out that sort of paved the way. And it's just a moment I look back on, and I'm very grateful. Someone lent me, I can't remember, it was like this nonprofit arts supporting company that lent me like $2,000 or something, and to do the printing, and then I paid them back, and that was how the whole thing began.
But what was kind of the impetus behind creating the deck in the first place?
Oh, that's a whole other. Sorry, I understood your question in terms of production. The impetus was, it was a time in my life where I had a very open window. I had just kind of come out of making art for galleries in the New York art world. And I thought that that was going to be my career. And the show that I had didn't do well at all. It was a really big gallery, and I felt like my career was set for life. And the show didn't sell. And I had gone into debt making the show. And I moved out of New York City. This was after about 13 years of living there. I just couldn't figure out how to be an artist there anymore. I moved to Philly. I lived in a renovated church. And I had this bizarre window of time in this new place, living in a church, not many friends in Philly. I was like, what am I going to make here? And I just thought, well, I've always wanted to draw the tarot, and this seems like the time to do it. And at that time, I had just started a very dedicated yoga practice. And in that, I wasn't just stretching my body. I was trying to understand energetics and heat and fire and inspiration and, mantra meditation. I kind of dove really deeply into that at the same time I started drawing the cards. And I think the two embedded into each other. And the deck has an energy that is not, it's not just like me drawing it. There's something else was occurring at that time. And I think it's the point I was in my life and my openness to a new way of thinking and a new way of being.
What a powerful thing to hear too, in terms of the creative practice and its connection to capitalism and money and how all these things are intertwined, and that feeling of, I don't want to project on you, but it must have been such a moment to have put yourself into this show and not have it sell, and then to have to almost recalibrate, but to I don't know, that's just such a, I'm inspired by what you said and how you lived through that moment of your life, because it can be so devastating as people when we have these expectations tied to our creativity and then it isn't fulfilled in some way and then is fulfilled in a different way.
Right. It's such a good point, Kate. I mean, looking back, I can speak about it quite eloquently, but just to be clear, at that time, I was absolutely devastated.
Yeah.
I mean, wrecked. I could not make heads or tails out of anything in the world, because my entire aim was to be a famous gallery artist in New York City. That's all I cared about.
Was your tarot practice influential in kind of guiding you through that time? And maybe we could also, just for people who are coming to tarot via this podcast for the first time in their lives, could you kind of explain what it is, and also just how, what your decks are? That's like 50 questions okay. in one, Kim. So
I'll try.
I can repeat myself.
So at the time, I was struggling to get into my tarot practice because I couldn't get excited about any of the imagery in a tarot deck. That was always the block. The obstacle for me in tarot was, I don't like how these cards look. These are such mystical ideas. They're so huge. They're so beautiful. And I would read and read about it, but I could never find a deck that I liked. So that's when the obstacle becomes the motivator or the inspiration for the thing, which happens a lot in art. People don't talk about it that much, but the block can be the thing. And eventually I just said, well, I have to draw my own deck. And I didn't really intend for any of this to happen, but then I realized, oh, well, I'm going to like this deck, and I think some of my friends are going to like it too, and maybe their friends. So that's when I started saying, like, well, let's see if I can get this printed somewhere and make a box for it, and I'll make a cover, and let's see what happens. And the other part of your question was around what is the tarot? So
yeah,
it's a fascinating question. It doesn't have a simple answer, but it's basically a set of 78 cards that have a certain structure. There's four suits which relate to the elements. And then there's 22 major arcana cards. They're related to really huge sort of archetypal events in people's lives. You could say all the cards are related to archetypes and sort of run by archetypes. But the major arcana is, as they rightly named it, major. So there's these big pivoting points in life. There's the death card, the lover's card, justice, the world, sun and the moon, the big whammies, so to speak. And so my interest is in the pairing of image and word. So you pair the word justice with an image. And those two things, the image and the word, become greater than the sum of their parts. If you just were to hear the word justice, you get all these kind of loaded ideas. It's pretty heavy, actually. If you just see the image, you're like, I don't know, what is that of? You know, there's a scale or there's some, what am I looking at here? But you pair the two things together and suddenly the mind focuses and it's very, as they would call it, like psychoactive. A door gets opened into memories, dreams, things you thought of, associations in your life. So the psyche gets activated in a very precise way. You could say it's a kind of like psychic acupuncture. The cards can act like that, little needles that go into the psyche at these different points. And they run through the different meridians of one's life, to just stay with the metaphor here. And when you get a couple of cards together in a reading, then it really starts to speak. And so, kind of no matter what your background is or your belief systems are around different practices like the tarot, one can be activated just through their imagination and through their memories and end up having a kind of conversation or experience that's new and beyond the ordinary. I like to think of tarot as a doorway between the ordinary and the extraordinary. And when we turn a card over, we say yes to the doorway that leads us from one reality to the next.
Did you have, I guess, let me back up. What was your first tarot deck? And do you have a deck that you, besides your own, that you kind of see as one that has inspired you?
Wow. My first tarot deck was given to me. It was a classic Rider-Waite deck given to me by a boyfriend, and he gave it to me in the car, and we were driving, and I was looking at it, and I was like, this is a bummer. I don't like these images. They don't feel right to me. And I put it in the pocket, you know, the pocket that's like below the elbow thing. And your door and the car door. I put it there. I'll never forget that moment. That was years before I drew the deck, but I just remember sliding the yellow cover, you know, the box with the bright yellow background of the,
I know the exact one. Yeah.
And I was like, nope. And really art and the tarot and all of these symbols and archetypes are so mysterious in that way, because I wouldn't remember that moment so precisely if there wasn't a certain energy there. The pushback, there was enough of a pushback that that I had to return to it, that I had to circle back as an artist.
What's your new deck? I want to hear more about that. I have your animal deck as well as your tarot deck, actually. So I'm very excited about this new one, but I would love to hear about it and what the process was like creating it.
The new deck is the fourth and final of the Wild Unknown series. And, I feel like I should go back and just say, like, I don't want to diss too hard on the Rider-Waite deck, you know?
That's fair.
There's a certain energy in having that sort of punk response. There's a spark there. If I had been like less, provoked by it, I might not have returned and felt like I have to remake this deck because this doesn't this doesn't sit right with me. But now from a different place in my life, I can look back on that deck and see there is, a mastery of the image. I'm so glad that it exists. My God, it paved the way. And, you know, I just want to make sure that that's clear. But also in terms of my interest and infatuation with the effect that images have on us, I'm not surprised that I had such a strong response to that deck and sort of wanting it to be reinvented, wanting it not to be people, for example, people that didn't look like me and people that didn't look like people that I knew. And I found myself more shut out than I was invited in. So that's why I opened the deck up to be animals. I was like, I forget the people. I don't know what the people look like in the tarot. Let's just use the creatures so we can get more easily into the metaphors of the deck, which then after seeing people's responses to the creatures in the Wild and Untarot, that's what led me to then draw its sister, what I think of as its sister deck, the Wild Unknown, Animal Spirit. And after that, the third deck is the Wild Unknown Archetypes, which is kind of like the motor that runs and fuels both of those first decks. It's like they're built on archetypes, the tarot especially. So then I went back to school and studied Jungian psychology and archetypes and alchemy, and started to more deeply understand what archetypes are. So then the third deck came in, and then the fourth deck, the alchemy deck, is the one that sort of gets to the underlying forces of even the archetypes and goes back to the very essential elemental forces of the world, such as the five elements and the planets and the metals and the metals of transformation and sort of secrets and the occult symbols around alchemy. So that's the new deck. It's a very, very humble attempt at trying to unpack the massive mystery that is alchemy.
Okay, wait, I need to back up and just ask the most beginner question of what is alchemy in this context? And like, what does one learn drawing a card from that deck?
It's a great question. Because when we hear alchemy, often we think of like men in their in the 17th century, 18th century Europe, yep, concocting a bunch of things with like beakers and fire and
yes,
stuff like that.
Yes, that's exactly, mm-hmm. That
so,
is it.
So it's unfortunate because it makes it seem like it happened then. It's a past tense thing. And now we have to learn about it in a scholarly way. But my perspective in making this project, the alchemy deck, and studying alchemy in general is coming to the place of finding it as a perspective on being alive. That we are part of a great ecosystem that's built on the five elements, and we are part of a great cosmos. So drawing a card, you could draw, you know, the Neptune card. You could draw a card that's related to a material of alchemy, like salt or iron or fire or fog or what else is in there? So many. And it's a way to activate the metaphorical lens where we start to think about the physical world and the mystical world as overlapping, rather than I'm just in my apartment. I'm just in my mundane apartment, and the mystical stuff happens when I do mystical stuff with mystical people. But to be able to start to sense that they're actually always intertwined, and there's an invitation through this deck to see them as such, so that the water in the cold shower is, yes, it's just water that's below a certain degree of our usual shower, but it's so cold that it awakens something in me that is beyond just the physical. It's a sense of courage and enlivenment and curiosity about my life. And I kind of snap out of it. How does just cold water do that? And so the alchemy deck brings us way back to the materials, and in a way we start to honor and study the basic materials of our life. And in that we find that the mystical is everywhere. It's absolutely saturating the whole world. And we get bolstered by that. Also, life becomes much more like fantastical and mysterious. And also we start to take our problems less personally. So there's these eight operations in alchemy, and they're cyclical operations. There's calcification, mortification, rotation. There are these big they're like the trump cards or the major arcana in the tarot. There's these themes. They kind of have like emotion emotion to them. And when they're occurring in one's life, we can start to realize, oh, I don't have to take this personally. This is a matter of rotation. This thing is repeating itself again and again and again. And that's a universal pattern. It's not just me experiencing that.
So we're just going to take a short break and we will be right back.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters, and then my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs. Oh. Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, we're back.
Say I am a beginner and I'm listening to this podcast and I'm like, where the hell do I begin? What is like the first step? I have this deck in my hands and like, and I'm assuming your decks come with like a lovely little guidebook and they feel very accessible to me as someone who has used them long before doing this interview with you. But what's like the first step for someone who's coming into this as a newbie? Dora, did you have follow-up question?
Yes, I have a corollary, which is I thought that you weren't supposed to buy your own deck.
I know. I'm also wondering this too. Is that a lab? Can we buy them?
Yeah. So what is that?
It's okay. I mean, there's all sorts of amazing like rules and regulations. And at the same time, it's you can definitely buy your own deck and everything's going to be okay. I'm doing a workshop corresponding to the launch of the Alchemy deck to activate the deck. This idea of like, you get the thing in the mail and you're sitting there like, what do I do with this thing? And we're going to do a practice that helps activate or bring to life the cards. And it's a very simple practice. It's one that's based on kind of reverence and gratitude for teachers. You could say there's so many alchemists in our life. You know, in the guidebook, I talk about like the baker and the hairdresser, the person at the auto body shop. They're working actually with very physical elements in the world. And you could think of all of us as alchemists in our own way. If you think of the person who works in a hair salon, I mean, my God, they're working with temperature all the time. They're refining color, they're refining shape. You know, it's very beautiful once you start to take on this perspective of life as a kind of alchemy and as life as our laboratory, so to speak. But to go back to this question around what do you do and how do you access it, I think less is more is my favorite way to approach any of the decks. I really love, as was mentioned earlier, like a card a day, and delving deep into the theme of the card, because you could say each of these cards could be studied and worked with for a long, long time. You don't have to know, you know, in my opinion, I kind of run counter to a lot of like tarot culture, but I am interested in hearing from someone who pulled one card from the tarot and studied one card for 5 years rather than someone that knows all the Google search galore and supposedly knows all 78 cards back and forward, you know, right off the bat, because there's a subtle sensitivity that can be developed in every single one of the themes. It's really studying different facets of life. And all this sounds so heavy. You can also just pull a single card with your close friend when you're having snacks and have a fun conversation. And that's all it needs to be. You can pull a card and make a drawing from it. You can pull a card and do journaling. You can pull a card and go for a walk and just contemplate the concept. I'm very interested in taking the cards and using them as each person sees fit in their life for that moment.
What are some of the other kind of rituals that you've developed in this space and as part of your kind of day-to-day practice?
That's an interesting question. Do you mean using the cards, or do you mean like making new decks or my creative practice?
I guess I'm kind of curious about, I think one of the things that came up, I think in the initial email we received, was about kind of mystical practices in terms of how they factor into, you know, using them in our own lives. And I'm curious if that's something that you do, if that resonates with you, and if so, what are they?
Oh gosh. I'm like, how long
are they not?
I'm like, the list is potentially very, very long. I can kind of go for it. I feel like that's my skill set is getting into different ways of using like a mystical approach, even to drawing. So I grew up as a very trained drawer. I went to art school, left home at 14, and worked with my teacher for 3 hours a day drawing. It was a very dedicated practice. And now I approach drawing very differently, where I'll draw, you know, blindfolded or with my eyes closed or in the dark with one candle or what have you, to see kind of what is the image that wants to come forward. So I'm always trying to push that line between the physical and the mystical, no matter what I'm doing. And that's really what interests me most creatively. And then in terms of practices right now and in relation to the cards, I've been thinking a lot about how when we come to a tarot reading, often it's like, I want an answer. Give me the answer.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have that too. It's like, I need to know. And lately, before I pull a card, I've been doing this practice, this meditation called puja meditation, P-U-J-A. It means an offering. And you put your hands in an offering shape and you hold the elbows extended outward and the eyes are almost closed and you hold that position and there's a chant that goes along with it. But it's an 11-minute hold. I don't necessarily do it for that long. I'll do it half the time, 5 minutes. until I start to feel that until I start to feel first energy in my hands, because I'm going to draw a card with my hands. So you want to have a certain kind of like energy in your hands. Just for listeners, you certainly do not have to do this before you pull a card, but it's really interesting to do it if anyone has been using the cards for years. Even if you do it for 1 minute, the elbows are straight. That's the real kicker of the whole thing. Elbows are straight. And it's this gesture of the palms are both receiving. It's a gesture of receiving and it's a gesture of offering. So you can get into the headspace of, I'm bringing my worry, my impatience, and my confusion, my frustration, my need to know, I'm bringing that to the table and I'm offering it to the greater wisdoms that be. And in return, I'm asking to receive some information and some guidance. So I really love that as a way of walking into a reading. And then when I pick up the deck that's in my hands, my hands are prepared because they've just made the shape of an offering. And it's a whole different feeling. I didn't think I'd be talking about this today. This is like kind of a newer phase for me that I'm experimenting with.
That's cool.
But I find it's really powerful. And it shuts out that, it doesn't shut out, it bypasses that grabby feeling of the hands with the tarot cards. Like, what am I going to get? This card, that card. And it better be a good one. All this stuff sort of neutralizes the mind and brings us back into a place of reverence, which is very, very crucial for any mystical practice to have a deeper effect is reverence.
Can we talk a little bit about wellness culture? Because I do think, I think you've talked a bit about its impact on your life just as a person outside of your work, or I'm sure it's all intertwined, but I'm curious how you navigate being a participant in the world of wellness, because there are so many things that are so incredibly positive about the space. And then there are so many things that are incredibly negative and harmful. I'm thinking more along the lines of, you know, cultural appropriation and whitewashing. And so I'm wondering how do you navigate this world of wellness that's being kind of monetized and turned into this whole industry. And this is something Dory and I talk about too, as a podcast that is centered on self-care. It can be kind of confusing. I don't know. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on how you navigate it.
It's such a great question and it is mega confusing. It's a question I take very seriously. Thinking about when our practices, spaces, creativity, when are these things pulling me away from the quote unquote reality of life, the complexity of life? When am I avoiding and escaping the pain? Why does it always have to end up with a product? These are questions I'm running through my mind all the time. I do not have any answers, but I know that it's important for me to sit with the discomfort of the questions. And meanwhile, this is really important, not give up on the things that I do, the practices that give me enough energy to face the day and be myself. We cannot give up on the practices that empower us. Even if the teachers and institutions and lineages are conflicted and confusing, all of that is confusing. But the presence of prana and energy in the body that strengthens us to be ourselves in this world that desperately needs us, that is not confusing. It's clear nourishment and it brings us to a place where we can be more compassionate, more active, more clear with our intentions, better friends, better moms, like all the things. And so it's been really important for me to not confuse those two things. Regardless of how I feel about the wellness industry, all the lineages of yogas and gurus. I mean, I've lived in an ashram. I've been devastated by the news from that ashram. At the same time, I have to hold the reality that when I do the practices that teacher to student have been taught and passed down to me, I feel very much alive and very strong, more confident. And that's how I have to show up. So holding the tension between the negativity and the confusion, and also knowing what I need to do each day so I can show up as best I can, knowing I'm going to make mistake after mistake after mistake. And the practices will also bring me to a place where I can apologize and I can move forward and learn. So I think it's an energy game. I think we all need more energy now. Otherwise, it's too much. I get very serious with this kind of thing.
No, like, I love
it. It's very important.
I'm entranced listening to you, Kim. It's like,
you have a hypnotic voice and just like way of speaking.
I'm swept up in everything you're saying.
But I also want to say, to go back to this idea of products, products are so weird. I feel so bizarre that I sell products, you know? And my friend,
we feel the same way. Yeah, I get it.
My friend and I were talking this morning about how hilarious it is that the tarot is a product. There are these cards. You buy the product. There are 78 cards. Each one of the 78 cards that you physically hold is doing its very best as a card might to represent the thing that it is trying to represent. But the thing it's trying to represent is so huge. Like the lover's card, it's just this little card, this little flimsy card, and it's doing its very best no matter how hard I draw it or how magical it looks. The thing that fuels the lover's card is like mesmerizing and so beyond a product and so beyond, you know, a name even. So in a sense, the product is the most mundane aspect of all these things we're talking about. It's the physical and the tangible, but we're talking about the big forces that animate the cards.
Kim, it's been so wonderful to get to talk to you. This has just felt really, I don't want to say comforting, but just it's been a very nourishing conversation, I think is the word that I'm looking for.
Great.
And you're inspiring me to get back to tarot.
I know, Dory, same.
Yeah.
To get back to what?
To tarot.
Oh, great. I can't wait to have you get the alchemy deck. It will be less confusing than I explained it. I think I went like deep into the esoteric side of it. But
no, it sounds absolutely beautiful. And, you know, I just think your work has so much meaning for so many people. It's impossible to quantify, I think, the impact it has.
When is the alchemy deck out?
The alchemy deck is out July 5th this summer. And then I'm doing that workshop on July 10th for people that pre-order the deck. So it'll be a fun one.
Awesome.
It's kind of an homage to my first drawing teacher who taught me how to draw, and she taught me about alchemy. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, this will be out before that. So people will have time to pre-order and sign up for your workshop if they want to.
Great.
Kim, where can people find you and buy your books, order, buy your tarot, order everything, etc.?
You can find me at kimkranz.com and thewildunknown.com. And I also have InstaFeed as Kim Kranz, and The Wild Unknown has a feed too. So any of those spaces, you'll find plenty of information and news.
Amazing.
Ooh. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, like I said, I was really inspired by all her kind of morning rich self-care rituals.
Yes. She was so great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed getting to talk to Kim. Now, do I want to buy her new deck? Yes. The alchemy cards?
Yeah, yes. It sounds so cool.
I know. And I do seriously recommend. I've used her animal deck, and she's just great. Okay, well, moving on, Dory. Your intention last week was to, quote, move your bod.
Yes. So I actually wrote about this a bit in the Forever 35 newsletter, that I had been trying to do this 30 minutes a day for all of June thing. Mm-hmm. And there had already been a couple of days where just for various reasons, it just like didn't happen. And I wrote about how I think in the past I would have been like, well, fuck that up. Like, what's the point of continuing at all? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now I'm like, you know what? Perfection is not the goal here.
I like this.
I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to aim for 30 minutes a day.
Ooh, aim.
And if it doesn't happen, what a powerful word. I'm going to be kind to myself. But I'm going to keep going. I'm not abandoning ship.
Dory, this is really beautiful. Forgive me for being a little cheese ball, but it is.
No. What kind of cheese ball? Like one of those,
oh my God.
Ones that come covered in nuts. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, no. I'm talking about the kind that my mom used to buy when I was a kid that came in like a blue jar. Like, I think they're Planters.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And they're perfectly round and they're the color of Cheetos.
Yes, and they're so, mm-hmm. Yeah, Planters cheese balls. Well, now I need these. I need some Planters cheese balls immediately. They kind of melt in your mouth. Okay, yeah. Well, that's the kind of cheese ball that I am.
Okay,
I'm a Planters cheese
ball.
Got it. I think this is lovely.
Well, thank you.
And I also think like you just are doing what you can and taking it day by day.
Yep, exactly. This week, my intention is to watch some TV.
I'm so behind in TV.
I'm behind in TV, but I'm also like, and I'm like wondering if this is sort of related to my depression that like, I almost like even sounds so weird, but even just like the act of watching TV, I'm like, it's too overwhelming.
That doesn't sound weird at all.
When you get depressed, do you get decision paralysis?
I mean, I feel like that's how I spend a lot of my life because of just my brain.
I think I just start feeling like, oh God, there's just too much to choose from. Like I just can't. Yeah.
I'll just lay here instead.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so, but there's such good stuff on TV and I just want to like watch some good TV. So that's my intention this week. Just watch TV.
Do you have a show that you're going to start with?
Well, I need to finish Somebody Somewhere.
Oh my God.
I got through, I think I'm like six episodes in, so I only have a few more. But that is a show that I would like to watch. And then I have weirdly been craving going back to, did you ever watch Last Tango in Halifax?
No, but it was recommended to us by so many listeners.
So it's this British drama about two families that kind of come together when they're like the grandmother of one and the grandfather of the other get married. They had known each other as kids and then they kind of like reunite and then it becomes like a family saga. And it's like so soapy. Like some of the subplots are just like so ridiculous that you're like, really? Come on. But you know, when you like get into a show, like I've probably watched like four seasons of it. And you start to like miss the people. Like I kind of like miss them. Like I'm like, what are they up to? What are my old pals in Halifax up to?
Do I get like this? Yes. All the time. Also with reading books, I get like this.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I might just like it's kind of comforting. Although I think the reason I stopped watching it was because I had hit this sort of like depressing point where no spoilers, but like there was like some death and I was just like, "Oh, this is getting too heavy. What happened to my like fun, soapy, intergenerational family drama?" And someone else recently said that they had rewatched 6 Feet Under.
I've never seen it.
Oh my God, Kate.
I know.
Oh, So I did watch it, you know, when it came. I actually didn't watch the first three seasons in real time. I watched 4, 5, and 6 in real time, and then I went back. But anyway, point being, this person was like, you know, it really hits different at like 44. Ooh. This person was 44. It really hits different at 44 than it did at 28. And I was like, huh. And they were like, it holds up. It's a great rewatch. And I was like, maybe I'll rewatch 6 Feet Under.
Ooh. Okay. That
is also kind of on my mind. There was also one season that I didn't watch the whole season of, I think season 3. So like there will be some episodes that I've never seen.
I say go for it.
I think I might.
That seems very like the right spot.
Okay. Oh, there were 5 seasons. Why did I think there were 6 seasons? Okay. There are only 5 seasons. That doesn't seem like too crazy.
You can knock that out real fast.
I can knock that out.
Trust me.
Fast. Yeah. Anyway, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with you? Did you lose your mind on a deadline?
Okay. I mean, yes, and I'm still on it. I'm going to be on it for a while. Buckle up, everybody. I did maintain one boundary, and I was actually very proud of myself. I did not work at night for the most part. Working at night is something I have done. It exhausts me, but it also stimulates my brain so much that then I have a hard time falling asleep, going to sleep, and then I stay up till like 1 or 2 in the morning, and then I'm tired the next day, and then I feel even worse working. So instead, like, you know, I put my kids into bed, and then I went and started my own personal bedtime routine and have been asleep, you know, by 11 for the most part every night. And I've never been able to set that kind of boundary for myself. So that felt really good, because
that's
the temptation
great.
To always be working is very strong.
Don't I know it?
You know, that there's, I think what you're speaking about, and I think this happens whether you work from home or you work for somebody else, it's like sending emails in the middle of the night. Like, we're so conditioned to constantly be working.
Yeah.
So that was a big deal for me. And this week I wrote that I just want to move. I kind of like haven't really moved my body much this week, which I wanted to do. I also am trying to decide if I need to stop reading my alien books.
Oh.
I'm almost at the end of, I think I have like probably 6 more that I could do, and then I've read every book in this universe. We're talking like upwards of 30 to 40 books I've read now.
Holy shit, Kate.
Yeah. I know.
Oh my God. Okay.
I think I saw someone had a picture of all the books. It's a lot. It's, I think maybe it's total 40, but I don't know. I've read a lot of them. And I'm like, I should start reading something else. But there's also this part of me that doesn't want to. I just want to keep reading about these aliens. So it's kind of that same thing where I'm like, I would love to read all these wonderful books that I have sitting on my bedside table, but these freaking aliens are just like my comfort. Like, my only comfort is getting back into this universe where I'm now with alien pirates is where I'm at now. But eventually this is going to come to an end. So either I like finish it out or I take a break.
Okay. Where are you leaning?
Well, I already started the new one, so I have one more to finish. All and then right. I'm pretty sure the author is on her website, like doing one as a serial. Oh my God. Yes, it's on her website. Oh my God. Okay. I really just love these aliens. I don't know what else to do. So anyway, eventually I will read a different book that does not take place in this universe.
Okay. All right.
Well, this was a weird one. We are in weird spaces, don't you think?
We are in weird spaces, yes.
But that's okay. That's okay.
I mean, sometimes things get weird.
Don't we know it? Mm-hmm. Well, Dory, Forever 35 is hosted and produced by you, Dory Shafrir, and me, Kate Spencer, and it's produced and edited by Sam Junio. Sammy Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. Thank you all so much for listening.
Bye.